Welcome everyone to the Water Resources and Watershed Committee meeting, September 13th. Before we begin, I have some announcements to make. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Engineering Services section boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency's Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the committee using the call-in number or Zoom webinar link. In the event there is a disruption of service, which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public using either the call-in option or internet-based service, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled or will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. Participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on. Click the raise hand feature in Zoom. You will be notified when it's your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, when announced the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial *9 to raise your hand. Phone participants will be called out by the last two digits of their phone number or by name. When it's your turn to speak, please dial *6 to unmute. I'd like to remind the public that's attending in person that there are public comment cards on the table outside. Please complete and return them to Ms. Chang to help expedite public comments. The procedure for tonight's meeting are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I'll ask for public comments. I'll then ask for a discussion and questions from committee members. And then the committee then comes to a consensus to move an item to the board for consideration. Any PowerPoints shown at tonight's meeting will be posted to the SCV Water website. All committee members are present at the time. And so therefore, we'll continue with item one, Pledge of Allegiance. And Director Cooper, would you like to see this pledge of allegiance? Yeah.
Place your hand over your heart. Ready to begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
That's everyone. Please be seated. We move on to item number two, public comment. Are there any members of the public that wish to speak?
Yeah, at this moment.
Anybody who wants to mute? Do we have any virtual attendance?
We do.
All right, let's move on to item 3.1, review Gold-SIM scenario, assessing benefits of AVIC or water banking program. And this is going to be presented by Ms. Pakwa. Ms. Pakwa, please begin.
Thank you. So yes, tonight I'll be providing an update on the Gold-SIM model development, which we're calling the Water Resources Integration Model. Moving forward, we'll probably just use the Water Resources Integration Model, just since we have several tools we're using for our planning. Next. So I'll start with a background on the model and then a refresher on the uses of the reliability model and the new methodology that we're using, followed by two scenarios. So one shows the benefits of managing our Article 56 carryover storage. That's something the old model didn't have. And then I ran a scenario to show the benefits of a new banking program, a potential banking program for our reliability long-term. And then finally conclude with some summary and next steps. So if you recall, the board authorized an update to the prior reliability, or we used to call it MBK model, back in the spring of 2021 for several reasons. We wanted to improve the functionality, build expertise in-house, and use a platform that's easier to update and maintain. In February of this year, I provided an update on the Gold-SIM development. If you recall, I showed the value of monthly over annual time steps and provided an example of the analytical capabilities of the model using Rose Del Rio Bravo take and put capacities. So today I will be showing how we program the model with the Article 56 carryover storage, which is something DWR doesn't simulate in its delivery capability report. I'm also showing a sample run examining AVEC as a potential program to show how the model can simulate this and how we can interpret the results. So we do have a functional version of the model that continues to be updated as new information becomes available. Next. So there are many uses for the reliability model. We can use it to assess the adequacy of existing existing water resource portfolio to meet future demands, considering uncertainties and changing conditions. We can assess the value of new investments and compare options in a quantitative manner. We can consider investments in conjunction with new operating strategies for the entire portfolio of diverse supplies and programs. And we can assess the risks of interruptions to one or more supplies based on the resilience of the entire portfolio and range of responses available to SCV Water. So this graphic is just showing the user interface for this new Goldstone model. Next. As you all know, SDV has a diverse supply portfolio of imported water and local groundwater and recycled water. Actions taken in our watershed, like pumping of groundwater for municipal water supply, may also influence environmental flows. So we have this feedback where, you know, we want to look at the consequences of our actions. So the Goldstone reliability model is one of a suite of tools we are using to assess the benefits of different actions or decisions we make regarding our water supply and watershed resources. Similarly, the habitat suitability model I presented back in June is another tool that allows us to see how groundwater pumping and other actions we take can influence environmental flows in the Santa Clara River. So you can now see how these models will be communicating with each other, or, you know, we'll be coordinating to make sure that we satisfy objectives of different resources in our watershed. Next. So I've shown the general, you know, conceptual framework for the reliability model. You know, we have inputs, and these may include terms of water supply agreements. They may include output of other modeling projects. For instance, if we were to change our groundwater operating plan, this, you know, the results from the mod flow groundwater model become input to this model. We can update our demand forecast, our recycled water projections, and all these would be put, you know, are not hard-coded. They can be updated by the user. Next, we have the model itself. Oh, sorry. And then, so then we have the model itself, which is the analytical engine. And that's where we put in assumptions and strategies made by SCV Water staff. And we provide rules of operation. So how we operate on a more, on a shorter time scale, on a monthly time scale, you know, decisions, do we pump first from our banking programs, or do we use water stored in San Luis, or, you know, prioritize using Table A supplies? These are all put in there based on, you know, trying to represent as much of reality as possible. And then the output, generally, you know, we look at supply surplus, supply shortfalls, but we can look at other outputs that allow us to assess the benefits and costs of new investments. So in summary, next, you know, we have, you know, our inputs, Next, an analytical engine and output, and one more. And what we can do is based on our output, for instance, let's say we were testing a new groundwater operating scenario. Based on that output, we can go back and revise our assumptions, for instance, or revise, you know, the input. So it's a constant iterative process to try to maximize the benefits for our portfolio. Next. So I've covered this in the past, but I wanted to provide it as a reminder since I'm going through the new methodology. But, you know, GWR requires us to produce an urban water management plan, and we have to state in it what our supplies and demands are. So this is a way to assess the adequacy of our supplies. The analysis addresses variable hydrologic conditions and changing levels of development within the SCB service area. So the model simulates how the portfolio is managed over multi-year sequences of wet and dry years. We have, in the current DCR, the Delivery Capability Report, so the 2021 is the most current, we're simulating hydrology from 1922 through 2015, but this will actually be extended to 2022 in the next DCR, 2023 DCR. So the model can use CalSIM simulations relating to different assumptions of climate change, regulations, and future development on the state water project. And we can also simulate variability of local groundwater during wet and dry periods. And we typically perform simulations over 30-year planning horizons, wherein demands in SCB increase and new investments are either brought online or existing programs are retired. Next. And this, again, is a reminder of in a single time step. So this new module uses a monthly time step. So it's showing we have two scenarios with different base supplies and the same actually starting storage. Next. And assuming a certain level of demand. Next. In scenario one, you can see that our base supply is greater than demand. Next. So we would put any surplus supplies in our storage, and if we don't have enough storage, we would end up with excess supplies. In the second scenario, our base supply is less than demand, so we would pump water out of our storage. But in this scenario, we still have a shortfall, and so in the module, we would keep track of that. Next, please. And so, you know, we would have, you know, an output that quantifies what that supply shortfall is. So that's in a single time step. You know, we're running this for 94 years. We're running it over 30-year simulations. Sorry. We're running this 94 times. Each time it's 30 years. 30 years of hydrology. So it's a sequential. And so next, please, when you take that for a particular future year, then you can summarize for, you know, all these possible outcomes, the 94 possible outcomes, and you get a statistical summary. And what this shows is if you look at the positive area, which is basically the area above the horizontal line, this indicates we have a supply surplus, and anything negative, so lower than the horizontal line, would indicate a shortfall. In this example, the positive area under the dashed curve shows that over the 94 possible hydrologic sequences for a particular future year, we have about a 72% chance that we will have surplus supplies, and a 28% shortfalls. But what we're able to do is put some of that, you know, that I guess it's purple, violet. So that violet amount between the dashed line and the solid line in the positive area is what we're able to put in storage. And so we can decrease that surplus supply to, 68%. Similarly, instead of having a shortfall of 28%, because we have such a robust storage program, we're able to draw water, the green area, from our storage programs and reduce our supply shortfall to 90%. So this is how you would interpret these graphs. Next. Oh, it's not animated. What's new now in with this methodology is that with the old MBK model, we were using supplies in a sequential manner. We always use the same supplies in that order. We didn't change them. But in this model, we have first priority supplies are our firm supplies. So our demands are generally always higher than these total firm supplies. So we always use them. Next, we would use our second priority supplies. And the order in which we use these changes with every time step based on a projected end of year Article 56 value, which I'll discuss in more detail in the next slides. So this, this is always changing with every time step. Next, our third priority supply is Rosedale Rio Bravo. It doesn't have an expiration date. It just has a lifetime fill of 200,000 acre feet. So we want to use it as a last resort and preserve it. It's like our insurance policy. And then finally, our fourth priority is using Castaic Flex Storage, which is a local, it's in our basin. So we want to use it last because it has the least risk of interruption. Next. Yeah, okay. No. Now it's animated. Yeah. So you can just go through. It's less overwhelming when it's animated. Yeah. All right. One more. Yeah. So the next, please. So now what I'll do is really focus on these second priority supplies that I talked about, where we determine the order in which the supplies are used every time step by looking at the projected end of year Article 56 balance. So Article 56 is a flexible and powerful storage that we manage. It determines our excess supplies and how we would manage our other programs. And what we do is at Uni Next, please, we set a maximum target storage and a minimum target storage. So these are user controlled, and they're not hard coded, so we can iterate and keep going back to see what we can hone in on, a kind of near optimal values. And so what we're trying to do is end the year somewhere between this minimum and maximum target storage. So the maximum storage is just an amount that, in very wet years, we probably will reach that value, but for the sake of being conservative, we just assume that we can never store above that maximum because it's at a high risk of spill. So we just assume we don't have that supply, even if it's the surplus here. Next. So I have several cases now. Next, please. So case one is when our end of year projected Article 56 carryover balance is greater than our maximum target storage. Next, please. So we prioritize using state water project supplies to meet demand, and then we send surplus water to flex if we have borrowed flex in the past, and then to our banking and exchange programs. Next. And so how we allocate the surplus supplies is also based on some rules. So we always send it to Castaic Flex first, next. And then Rosedale Rio Bravo, since we, you know, it's our insurance policy, so we want to make sure we have supplies in it. Next. Then to our banking programs. And finally, next, to new, if we were going to have new exchange programs or sales. And then if we are in case two, next please. And case two is where our projected end of year Article 56 carryover balance is between the minimum and maximum targets. Next please. Yeah, so we, I didn't see you did it. We prioritize using state water project supplies to meet demand. We return any borrowed water to flex. But in this case, we don't put any water in our banking or exchange programs. We just hold off of that. And then finally, in case three, we are projecting an end of year Article 56 carryover balance less than our minimum target storage, which means that we probably don't have enough water from base supplies and Table A entitlement to achieve our Article 56 target storage. So what we do is we start pumping water from our banks and exchange programs this year to end the year with a minimum balance in San Luis. This isn't always possible. We can have a year where existing shortages are severe that even drafting all our banks and exchange programs will not give us our minimum storage in San Luis. Next, please. Next. And so how we draw water from our banking, from our banking and storage programs also follows some rules. What we're trying to do is not extract from a single program and then, you know, empty it and lose that take capacity in future years. We're trying to balance the lifetime extractions from each bank, so basically maximize that. And so what we do next, these is, how we take water from each of these banking and exchange programs is based on looking at when they expire, how much water they already have in storage, and then making sure that we can continue using that extraction capacity in the future. Next. And then we use Rosedale again, because as soon as we know we might be in dry conditions, we want to pump our banks and get access to our exchange programs while we have that capacity, because it's not always available all year long. It changes on a monthly basis. Next. Then we would use our allocations, Table A, if any, or any remaining Article 56 carryover storage. And finally, next, we would use our flex. So that's... I kind of covered, high level what these kind of new features in our new books and programs. So next, I'm going to move to scenarios. Next, please. And what I'm showing here in the table are three scenarios listed in the columns. So the first one I call prelim. So that's basically running the model without simulating the management of Article 56 carryover storage. And then I have the base scenario where we're simulating the management of Article 56 carryover storage. And then scenario one simulates Article 56 carryover and a potential new banking program, AVEC. And then on the left side are all the programs we have. So you can see, everything in yellow means it's pretty similar across the different scenarios. Anything in blue means they're not being simulated. And then, at the bottom right corner are the parameters, default parameters for the ABEC banking program. But what I want to show, just point a highlight, is that I'm not simulating SAUGUS 3 through 8, which is a change from the urban water management plan. I'm not presuming access to semi-tropic NLF. And by doing this, we're presenting a conservative estimate for our future to show how our portfolio operates under constrained conditions. I performed an extensive sensitivity analysis on these minimum and maximum Article 56 targets that I discussed earlier, and based on expert judgment, selected 5 and 15,000 acre feet as the minimum and maximum targets. Yes?
Just to make sure I heard you correctly. Because it's SAUGUS, you're not assuming SAUGUS 3 and 4, just SAUGUS 1 and 2 at this
point. Yes.
Question on the AVEC, is that the numbers we're looking for at AVEC? Or can we get higher?
There is potential to. What I started with is looking just at the default parameters they gave us. And I did analyze, played with different puts and take capacities as well as maximum storage.
So I think, Director Cooper, it's something you'll see here, and the reason this model is cool is that you get to test some of those scenarios, right? So you can hone in on what you should target as a participation level, right? So that's kind of the exercise that you'll see Najima walk us through here in these next few slides is, you know, you can make AVEC, you know, too big.
Yeah, it costs you too much money.
Right, yeah. And so it's kind of that, you know, looking at our portfolio and honing in on the right size of the program of what's going to benefit the agency the best. So anyway, I think that was a key point there.
AVEC may be cheaper than semi-tropic at some point.
Quick question. So if this is a conservative approach, on the very top, you're assuming demand with active conservation. Should we block that out and not assume active conservation?
Well, so that's something we are more sure that we can implement versus SAUGUS 3 through 8 is still, you know, has some uncertainty. So that was the reason for doing that.
Okay.
But, you know, we can simulate anything. This is just for, you know, illustrative.
Yes, okay.
Yeah.
Director Ozmowski, so that's demand with active conservation. That's not demand with conservation as a way of life. So the new regulations are not here. So that I would consider that a conservative. So
that's our base.
Yeah.
But today's practices.
Yeah.
Okay. Please continue.
Next, please. Okay, so what I'll do is first, the first examples results will compare the preliminary scenario with the base scenario. So preliminary is just, again, for showing the value of Article 56, but in the future, moving forward, we'll always compare to that base scenario. So terminology. Next, please. And so we made some assumptions on some of the initial balances going into 2024 for some of our programs. And then I'm listing again the potential new AVEC program parameters. So these are, again, all of these can be changed by the user. They're not locked in. But that's what we're starting with. Next. Yeah, so this, so now this slide, it's only for, you know, just one slide. I show these exceedance curves, the other ones will be summarized, but just again, to demonstrate each color represents a future year. So I did 2024 and then 2030, 2035, 2040, 2045, and 2050. And on the left side are the results, you know, water basically it's our water supply reliability. When we don't have access to management of Article 56 carryover in St. Louis. And then the right graph is when we do have access to managing that carryover, Article 56 carryover. And so, you know, we don't need to go in detail over this, but you can see, you know, where these curves begin to get negative, you know, are shifted on the right side, right? When we have, you can see the value of being able, you know, having access to this storage in St. Louis. We're able to increase our reliability. It acts as a buffer between wet and dry periods. Next, please. And so I have this, you know, summarized in bar graphs, and you can see, so the blue is the preliminary scenario, we don't manage Article 56 carryover, and the base scenario, the orange, is with management of carryover. And you can see we have, you know, at least a 10% increase in our reliability just through that storage.
Those makes a lot of difference.
Next, please. And I also, what I did was look at the maximum supply shortfall for these two scenarios as well. Again, blue is the preliminary without Article 56, and orange is with Article 56. And as I mentioned earlier, this is a more conservative representation of the future than what's in the urban water management plan. Single year most severe shortage in the urban water management plan for 2045 and 2050 is different than in this scenario, because we're not simulating Saugus pumping, you know, which goes up to 30,000 acre feet. Also, in our urban water management plan, you know, the last one used the 2019 DCR, which had a dry year allocation of 5%, and the 2021 is at 2%. So you can see the differences why the magnitude of the supply shortfall might be this much. Next, please. So now I will show AVEC simulations. And again, just showing that same table again as a reminder. And what I'll do is, one more please, is compare the base scenario with scenario one. So they're all the same, except that scenario one now has, we have access to this banking program. Next. And then again, just a reminder of what the parameters are, default. Next. And, you know, these are assumed to be uniform all year. So every month, you know, the 20,000 acre feet of take and put capacities are divided equally over the course of the year. And so what you can see is the additional storage provided by AVEC increases reliability, especially during extended periods of droughts.
And that's without Saugus.
Yes.
That's.
Yeah, our ability to store that surplus water and then use it helps. And then, next, please. Same thing, you can see we have a reduction in the magnitude of supply shortfalls between, you know, the two. So, yeah, I didn't mention the base is in orange, and then scenario one with AVEC is in gray. So what I did next was I played a lot. I ran many scenarios, changing the AVEC parameters to see if we can further improve reliability and decrease the magnitude of supply shortfalls. Next, please. And so what I did was I used, you know, they may not be super realistic, but I just wanted parameters that were non-constraining. So I set the put and take capacities to 65,000 acre feet per year and the maximum storage to 175,000 acre feet. You know, I started with small increments, but then I'm like, okay, I don't want AVEC to be constraining. So I wanted to see what other factors were constraining our ability to achieve higher reliability scores and lower supply shortfalls. And really, what was interesting is that the availability of supplies, we, you know, even when you're running, you know, remember, it's, we use 94 years of historical hydrology, but every run is a 30-year sequence, right? So if you're run, if you get into a 30-year sequence where you have, you know, normal and like a combination of normal and wet and dry years, but not many surplus years, you just, you know, are not, or if they occur before 2030 when the program begins, you're just not able to fill that bank. So we do, you know, so it does, you know, availability of supplies becomes an issue at some point. And then I did look also at the limits on our aqueduct capacity. So just the ability to put water, you know, if we have a surplus here, you know, and we're using our, you know, I think we have like an 11% of our maximum table A entitlement is our aqueduct capacity for either, you know, delivering to the bank or taking from the bank. And that was secondary. It played a very small role in some cases. But really, I think the biggest take home here was the availability of supplies. So go ahead.
Offline, if I could talk to you more about the aqueduct capacity.
Sure. But like I said, it was secondary. It wasn't really a big factor.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I looked at was, you know, in addition to playing with AVAC parameters, I also played, you know, with the maximum and minimum Article 56 targets. So what happens is when you set these targets really high, you're prioritizing storing as much in St. Louis, you know, before you start sending to your banking programs. It's good until, you know, what happens though is you're at a risk of spill. So if you get a wet year and the St. Louis spills, then you kind of you forego access to the water that could have been stored in these banking programs. So I did play with it. It did have some impact where lower values for the Article 56 targets provided lower values of reliability. So you had more frequent shortages. However, the shortages, the magnitude of the maximum was less when it occurred because, you know, you still had access to some water versus, you know, having spilled, you know, most of it in. So it was an interesting, you know, very eye-opening, and it's a balance of what we want to do. So that's where I, you know, the question came, well, what level of reliability do we want? And do we prefer, you know, setting this high reliability goal, let's say 100%, but then when we do get a shortfall, it's really high in magnitude, or would we want slightly less reliability, let's say 92%. And so we end up with more frequent shortages, but they're smaller in magnitude. And maybe we can manage through them through extraordinary conservation or, you know, buying water. You know, we can manage through that versus, you know, just having 1 year where we're short 20,000 acres. So that was interesting. Again, this is an example. So it's not... not going to happen.
And I think we set it at 95%. That was our right reliability. That's what we wanted.
That's what we had to use. Yeah. I don't believe that there's a quote unquote policy other than that was our target. It's been our practice of target.
It's so I'm just going to kind of give a recap of what we heard. Next, please. So SCV Water now has a running supply reliability model with several improvements. So we have a monthly time step. We have complex rules for the management of Article 56 carryover storage and rules on how we fill and take from our banking programs. Next, please. We showed in this example that access to and management of Article 56 carryover storage serves as a buffer between dry and wet years and can improve reliability by at least 10%. And preliminary AVAC evaluations demonstrate the value of additional storage for improving reliability. So AVAC increased reliability by more than 15% by 2050 at build-out. And it reduces the magnitude of supply shortfalls by more than 25% by 2050. And as I mentioned earlier, one of the main constraining factors for filling AVAC or other potential storage programs we may participate in is the availability of surplus water upon realization of increased demands in service area. So that's another thing I didn't mention is that, you know, as you go into the future, you have less surplus water because we have higher demands. Next, please. Next. And so now that we have a model, we can begin to assess the need and value of other projects inside and outside our service area. So we can begin to analyze, the value of investing in the Delta Conveyance Program or investing in a new water supply like Sites Reservoir, investments in Saugus dry year wells, and development of local groundwater recharge and recovery, new conservation measures, and investments in new banking programs, to name a few. I mean, we can look at many more options. And so together with other tools, we can evaluate the consequences of alternate local groundwater management and recycled water management scenarios in a much more comprehensive way. We can look at the value of storage, refined operating strategies, and interaction with environmental flows. So really, in summary, we can now answer questions that you might have in a quantitative way. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we move on to directors, any questions, comments from the public in attendance?
And this time.
Virtual.
Yeah.
Directors, questions?
Fantastic presentation. The thing is really coming along and starting to be valuable. And I like how you've incorporated AVAC in it. It's going to be interesting to see with AVAC and if we were to invest in more Saugus grinder wells, what Sites really does for us. Because that may become very expensive. See where that goes.
Are you referring to diverting those funds into
this will help show that whether other investments.
Understood.
Yeah, can be more valuable than what Sites may be. I mean, Sites is very expensive.
Yeah.
That's a question of both near midterm and longer term.
Yeah.
Investments with Sites, you would hope that that's a program that lasts 70 or 100 years in groundwater banking programs. More like 40 years or something like that. So there's that trade-off. But at some point in time, you've got to make a decision as to
I think we saw that last Friday, what the next 10-year bill looks like.
2.1. Yeah.
It's huge.
A question, since the slide is on. Can you go to the next slide?
The next slide or the slide before? Or
maybe the slide before, I'm sorry.
What slide number do you
have? 34. So the previous slide. So regarding the increased demands in service area, I mean, we have years of data. We have years of new connections and new building codes and so forth. I mean, can we be pretty confident of how much demand we can expect in the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years? Is that really a question mark?
You know, the other thing, you know, I keep repeating, this is an example because so I used the demand forecast that was
the, you know, there's the model, right? And then there's the input, as Anaja was walking through here. So a lot of the input is coming from projections of the planning that we do, right? The planning.
I get that. Okay. That's fine. I'm just general question about QC, QA.
Yeah.
And okay. How that.
So when a major change in the logic occurs, let's say, you know, we're saying that, you know, we're just changing how we prioritize the use of our supplies, then, you know, that logic would be updated and then QA, QC would be done.
Okay, one more question. Mm-hmm. Volumetric flow rate and volume. How do you determine that for each of those supply assets?
You mean QA, QC or the?
Yes, yes.
Oh, mass balance. So mass balance based on basically every month, based on every time step, you know, it's got a, can't have, you know, can't, the model, if the model shows we're using more supplies than we have, then there's obviously an error somewhere.
Okay. And then one last question. Have you tried comparing same scenario using a proven MBK model for that particular scenario versus Goldsim to see if they match?
It was difficult because the MBK is an annual model. And the Goldsim is monthly, but what I did try to kind of in the last presentation, which I think was back in, I don't know, February, yeah. I tried to mimic as much as, you know, do a Goldsim version with the logic where it's sequential use of supplies and sequential fill of banks, just to kind of get an idea and kind of, you know, verified, you know, went into the MBK and, you know, looked, why is the MBK showing, you know, slightly better values? And that's when you see MBK assumes, you know, access to a take capacity, you know, for the entire year versus Goldsim has monthly constraints on take. So, you know, if you only need that supply in 1 or 2 months of the year, in the MBK model, it assumes you have it available. You have that annual take, but in the Goldsim, it's only that monthly take. So it's like 1/12 of the actual take. So you can kind of then look and interpret the results and say, oh yeah, it makes sense why the results look that way. So there was, you know, to the extent possible, there was trying to do a comparison. And then we've done, you know, even just Excel, like simple Excel QA, QC, where we kind of simulated our own. We know exactly what's happening. And we know which case number, you know, condition we're looking at. So we know which supplies we want to use first. And
okay.
So that's been part of the QA, QC process.
Thank you. President Martin, you had a question coming.
Thank you, Chair Ozahansky. Oh, excellent presentation. It seems to be a very powerful tool. I'm trying to reconcile in my mind the issuance of the urban water management plan on a 5-year basis and the use of this tool for our planning on a regular basis, like each water year or each point in time during a water year, depending on circumstances. It seems to be a great tool to make decisions on what to do in a given water year. But when we do the urban water management plan, it seems to be a snapshot in time, even though we have to consider a certain number of dry years, consecutive dry years. Are all those supply components then assumed to be there? I mean, my understanding of the urban water management plan is that we assume that those supply components are there. Then we make the conclusion that there's adequate supply out to the planning horizon of 2050. But on the other hand, we have a whole list of opportunities to increase our water supply portfolio. And that's, and as Steve already answered, it's the moving target and circumstances change regularly. So am I correct in my understanding that the urban water management plan is kind of a snapshot in time that satisfies the requirement to issue such a plan to know where we are at that point in time? But because when we get to a point where we say with a 95% reliability, obviously there's a lot of probabilities plugged in for the various supplies versus the demands. So is this
with the, you know,
where does this fit in
with the urban plan is really looking right at making sure we have supplies for dry years or extended dry years. This is looking at the seek of how our entire portfolio is operating over sequences of wet and dry and how we're able to fill and, you know, take. And so we can be more, I guess, confident with our.
It's more real time. This is, in my perspective, Colson is a much more conservative, as well as a much more adequate himself to covering. Provides you a lot more information. If Najwa had put all of the assumptions in that we have in the urban plan, in the Goldstein, I don't know this far back, but I would expect we would see that we were 100% reliable with those assumptions.
So it's, if I may add to that, to Director Marks, so the urban water management plan is setting the roadmap of how you are achieving reliability by adding. You have to mention in the urban water management plan which resources you are going to acquire to improve your reliability. This is a tool that can tell us which ones we are going to put into our portfolio and how our portfolio will perform. And again, we can pick from the tool from the model results showing the years that we need to meet for the urban water management plan, so we can fulfill our requirements for the water management plan using this tool, and it could help us into determining for year 2030, 2035, 2040, 2045, how our reliability of each one of these resources that we're adding along the way, how our portfolio is performing in each one of those years. And again, as Director Marks mentioned, NIGWA just ran one scenario now with AVAC and with two scenarios, with carryover management and AVAC, and we can see some of the improvement in the development. There is a big opportunity here to run several scenarios so that we can see how our portfolio in the future could look like and how we can improve that. This is a chance for us to look into how we can improve.
Yeah. I mean, staff would need to make a decision, I think, as to whether or not to use Goldstein as the basis of our reliability reporting in the urban plan next summer.
Hold on, wait a minute. So for the 5-year urban water plan, the plan is to use this tool as an output for
that. I just said they'll have to make a determination whether or not to use this tool.
Okay.
As opposed to what we've done in the past, which is very very much a spreadsheet approach of
right.
You know, we think we can get X amount of water out of this program and Y amount of this other program, and you add them up and you make the case that you're reliable, whereas this is a much more sophisticated and I would argue much more realistic way of going about doing that type of
that analysis, was that done in-house, or is that, or do we hire consultants to do that?
I was the consultant, and then it became in-house,
okay.
Yeah.
And then we hired a consultant.
Urban water.
Oh, sorry. No, thank you.
Urban plan, we did that in-house. Kennedy James managed the development of a language and brought the document together, but the water supply balance spreadsheets, those were worked on in-house. Sarah has a lot more gray hair now than she can afford.
Yeah, and that's
she
those are highlights.
There was a very large Excel spreadsheet that had every table and back of to those tables.
Okay.
For the urban plan.
Now, I want to move the committee's meetings forward, but so you know, thank you for this presentation.
I do have one question for the committee. So I did hear at strategic planning about the opportunity for the full board to hear this. Is it, and we've done this a couple times at committee now, right? Kind of wanted the building of a model and Najwa refreshed us on that. And then now we've run a scenario. I do think there's value in running additional scenarios, like what does it look like when you add sagas in? What does it look like when you do conservation as a way of life? And, you know, there's other inputs that we can run scenarios on. But my general question is this something you want to see go to the board at this point, or you want us to continue working on it and refining the scenarios and working on those things?
I would think refining it to where you can add some of those other things in to where people can see the results of some of those other things, even if it's, you know, just ballpark numbers. But
well, what's the next step? What other scenarios are in the pipeline that you're contending? Considering
waiting to receive data on sites simulations. And then really anything else. I mean, ideally, but this I think will be a more long-term, long-term work, is to look at alternative groundwater operating strategies to see if we can, you know, really even, have our basin help us even more with reliability or not. But this, I think, you know, is going to take a year or two of work to kind of reassess, our groundwater model and kind of refine it to where we think, you know, we want to change our pumping patterns and so on.
Well, I mean, we've been talking about Goldstone for a while now. And I know last meeting we told staff to go back and, you know, refine the presentation, maybe run a scenario just like you presented today. I think maybe it's time to just show a little glimpse of this model. How does the committee feel about that?
I pick a night that the agenda is real light.
Yeah.
So we'll never. Got it.
That would agree that it would be useful for for the board as a whole to be more informed and get more comfortable with the analytic basis for analyzing future investments in reliability. I think that there's real value in that. And they hopefully would develop a comfort level with the tool. So when we do come in and say, okay, well, here's, you know, we're coming to you with a decision as to whether or not to make capital investments in AVIC or sites or
ECP or any of those.
ECP.
Yeah. Have we made any decisions based on this tool yet?
No, I think what you're seeing is the result of a lot of hard work right now. And I think a expression in confidence that the tool is ready to help us make decisions. It's not the only thing right now, right, that you can use to make decisions, because there's a whole risk, you know, process that you've got to go through and think about risk. Example, Sites Reservoir, it's on upstream side of the Delta.
Yeah.
Okay, so that has risks. What are they? They're tough to quantify, but there are risks there. But this tool, as you can see, does an awesome job of starting to project the value proposition of the add to our portfolio. So I think I agree with Director Marks in that if we're going to start using it as the basis for a decision as an agency, then we probably need to get people familiar and comfortable with it. And like I said, it's not just going to be the tool making the decision. There's a lot of soft art still in making these decisions.
Right.
And so that would be my statement on it, I guess.
Mr. Chair, if I might add to what Director Moss and Steve mentioned here, just a reminder that the work that we presented today is one suite of models in a big suite of models that we are developing, and we are trying to create the interconnection. I think it's timely to go to the board to present at least this portion of the work that's been developed significantly recently, before we go with the bigger suite of models when it's connected to CEF, when it's connected to the habitat simulation model, and when it's a suitability model, and also when it's connected to the groundwater run scenario. So probably this is a good information now to share, have the board understand some of the technicalities, a little bit of the technicalities of the system of this portion or this part of the project before we go with the bigger decision-making suite of models that we are going to be using into the future, the resiliency initiative outcome.
Okay. I mean, we've been postponing this for a while, so yeah. So I think the committee has a consensus here, President Martin, to present some form of this to
a little bit of a concern, and maybe it's because I don't understand the whole picture yet. When we show, let's say, adding the AVEC program reduces our projected shortfall, is that a hypothetical scenario that's based on some more restricted assumptions that are in the urban plan? It just shows the value of adding AVEC doesn't really say we're projecting a shortfall. And I think if we show us a scenario where we're projecting a shortfall, you're going to have people on the board saying, well, I didn't know we were going to have a shortfall.
Yeah. I think part of what I was, I hear your concern for sure, Director Martin. That kind of gets after this idea of we can run other scenarios, right? And the Saugus sticks out. Right now, that's in our urban plan, that's 15 to 20,000 more acre foot than is currently simulated in this scenario. This is one component. Okay. Now, we did that to be very conservative in our approach because we don't have those wells installed yet, but that in the urban plan, that is our projection, is to operate the Saugus well field as a dry year firming supply and has been for a very long time. There are potential limitations to doing that. And so, you know, we didn't simulate it as part of this, but that's a scenario we could run. And you would have then, you know, that could be your base scenarios. You could add in Saugus, see what it does to the reliability number. The other one that sticks out to me as we start doing these projections is the demand side. We know we're tracking lower demand, and you'll hear that from Sarah just in a snapshot, but our demand is tracking lower than we project in the urban plan. That's before we do the conservation as a way of life component. So you could run a scenario that didn't take as conservative approach on demand, and that would change the outlook as well. So I guess that's, I share your thoughts in how we walk through that, because I think it's important to show kind of the reality of the picture, not be too conservative. There's a flip side that if you're overly conservative, you know, it's not facing reality that you're in either. So it's finding that balance that is a real challenge.
Well, I guess in that presentation, we're going to have a lot of asterisks and a lot of captions at the bottom stating that either it's very conservative or this is not, this is a hypothesis. I guess I am understanding what President Martin is saying, but at the same time, this is a tool that we're going to be using from now until for a while.
Yeah. It's good for them to know what the tool is that's being used to make the decisions.
Yeah.
It's not that we're having a shortage. We'll have a shortage at some point, but it's to show them the tool that it's not just somebody flipping a coin and saying, let's take water out and out of semi-tropic. It's we're going to turn it over to ChatGPT and say push the button and say what do we do, you know. But yeah, there's a lot that goes into these decisions that are made, right, on where we're getting water. I think that's what the board needing to know that.
I'm all for showing the full board the power of this tool and what it can do for us. I just don't want to give any of the board members the wrong idea that we're expecting a shortfall of any kind, because we're not saying that in our urban plan. And but at the same time, no one can argue that it's not good planning to go after additional programs to further increase the reliability of our supply portfolio. This has been proven to be good strategy from years past, and it will be good strategy in the years ahead. So I'm not saying that we shouldn't be pursuing those programs, but to give the board the impression that we're expecting a shortfall, that's my concern.
I'd say the same thing. That same chart is in the urban water management plan that shows the shortfall goes below the line. That's in there.
I think that's in there, isn't it? I know we have that chart in the reliability report as an example. My suggestion would be that the report to the board start off with a model using the spot random urban plan portfolio, and then go on to say, now we've we have, so to show you the value of this planning tool, we've put in some different assumptions, and then you can go through this, and we added the San Luis Reservoir, but there, no, but we did not, and we took away additional surface supplies, which incidentally, at least one board member or one past board member always questioned whether or not we could achieve those Saugus supplies.
Yeah.
Putting it in that context of the urban plans, what we think are the most likely scenario was, but we want to do robust planning and using this tool set help us assess those risks.
Let us take a look at that. I think
that's my only concern. Yeah, I think it has a lot of value to show the world that we have this tool. We're becoming knowledgeable and using it, and we'll continue to do so. And just be such some sensitivity to some of the stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
So we'll go back and talk amongst ourselves and work on that a little bit, and then, you know, when we're ready, we'll let the group know, and we'll try and get on board again at that point.
Okay.
On the other hand, you know, the board members who would be susceptible to that same sensitivity should appreciate the fact that we have now a tool that can sharpen our planning process to avoid any of these potentials. But on balance, I think we should do it.
I think creating the model in Goldstone and creating this presentation for the board will be equal and difficult.
So hit the right depth. Yeah,
thank you. That was very good.
Thank you for the presentation. How long is our service contract with Goldstone? Is it just for 2 years and that's it? Or do we have it?
We maintain it every year.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Baum. Let's move on to item 3.2. Status update of water banking exchange program presented by Ms. Sarah Kelly.
I'm trying to get things going. Can you hear me okay? Sorry.
Yes, we can.
I hit share and then I can't get my video to come on. So but you don't need to see me probably. Okay. Hello. Good evening. So I'm going to give you a status of water supplies update. And you guys can see my slides, right?
Yes, we can.
Okay. I thought it'd be fun to just take us back to when it we had all those beautiful flowers, because it's been a while since I've given you one of these updates. So the poppies and the purple flowers in the background. But I'm going to go through precipitation, talk to you a little bit about how the demands have changed from our projections to actual, go through our water operations in 2023, and then talk to you about DWR operations and some position analyses. So precipitation this year, you know, usually around this time, I don't go into precipitation, but it happened to rain quite a bit in August. So I thought I'd bring it up again. We had a lot of rain before August. And as you can see in these graphics, we have more. So the water year is coming to an end. It's from October to the end of September. On the left-hand side, you'll see the comparison of this year in purple compared to our biggest year, our average in green, and our driest year. So we had quite a bump up just under 6 inches in August. And on the right-hand side, you can see how the precipitation has come to us this year in comparison to our historical average each month. And basically, we have, doubled or even tripled sometimes the monthly average that we're supposed to get. And I don't even know what percentage that is in August. It's just a lot. So we have about 40 inches of water for this water year and still a few weeks to go. So let's see what happens. But we've had a really good wet year locally. So in relation, demand comparison, I thought it would be interesting to just quickly go through this. And it's kind of what you guys were alluding to in the previous presentation. The urban plans, make some estimates on demands, but every year when we're looking at our operations, we adjust those based on what happens in the previous year. And so I'm getting to the point right now where I have to make some estimates for our 2024 demands. And this is a good example of where do you start? You can see in the graphic here, I've got the 2022 actual demands each month in the dotted green line. And then the projections that I made are that lighter green or yellow line at the top. That was even less than what I projected kind of around this time last year. That's the adjusted number. So and then what I've shown here in the graphic also is where we are in actual demands. And so our actual demands are actually falling quite far below our 2022 demands. When we go into the next year, or I guess in 2022, when I was estimating what's going to happen in 2023, at the time we were thinking it's going to be dry again, another drought year. And there was really no indication that it would start raining like it did. So as we started getting rain, you can see like our January through March period. I mean, those are some really low demands, but it was freezing cold and it was raining a lot and the demands reflect that. We still had conservation going and it continued to stay cool. All that precipitation helped those demands stay low. And our customers through the summer have done a really good job of reacting to the different weather patterns and the precipitation that we're getting. And so you can even see August came down again. July and August are usually our highest demand months, but we got 6 inches of rain and our customers reacted. So there's really my crystal ball still doesn't work. So there's really no way in guessing, but at this point in time, I'm expecting that our 2023 actual demands could potentially be 10% lower than last year's demands. The urban plan has demands for this year estimated over 70,000 acre feet, and we're probably going to end up around 55,000 acre feet. So it's just a really good example of how changes in weather, persistent droughts, lots of rain, dry years and conservation regulations can change those demand estimates very quickly. So it's going to take us a few years to, start working our way back up. But our customers have made a lot of changes. So our demands have definitely been bumped down, let's say, and in our next urban plan update will be reflected as such. So next, I wanted to talk about water deliveries through August. I've got two graphics here, a table and then a bar graph. So let's start at the table. What I wanted to show you is just a little something different. You've got our sources on the left-hand side. You've got the acre feet of water that's been delivered to our service areas through August. You've got in the next column, I wanted to show the acre foot that's been put into storage and exchange programs through August, and then remaining supplies on the right-hand side. So as an example, you can see our table A water at the top. We've had 8,500 acre feet delivered to our service area through August to meet our demands. We have stored or exchanged 23,500 to date, and we have about 63,000 acre feet remaining. That is a lot of water to still be moved around and allocated, but that's including water that we're going to carry over. It includes water that still needs to be delivered to meet demands for the rest of the year. It includes water that we're going to exchange with Rosedale. And it includes about 25,000 acre feet of water that we still have in surplus that we're going to manage. Going down, you can see our Article 56 carryover supplies. That was all exchanged with Metropolitan, so we have zero remaining. Our backup storage, we used about 4,600 acre feet. 330 went into our storage program, and we have zero left, but we did spill 2,600 acre feet. We had 1,500 acre feet of Article 21 delivered to date. And then we've had 6,000 acre feet from our Metropolitan Exchange that's supposed to come back to us this year delivered to date. So they only have about 290 acre feet left to execute that entire exchange program. And then with our BVR or B water, we've had 6,600 acre feet delivered so far. So we have 4,400 acre feet left. Then on the right hand side, I thought this was an interesting graphic to also show how our operations has shifted. So this graphic is a bar graph that shows the percent of water we use each month in groundwater to meet demands or imported water to meet demands. And so you can see in January, it was about a 50-50 split. So half of our demands were met with import supply and half with groundwater. But as it continued to rain, we worked with operations and we're like, you know, we need to back off on these groundwater supplies, let them recover. And so you can see how our operations has shifted to August. And at this point, we're using a little less than 20% of our groundwater supplies to meet demand. And we're really utilizing as much imported supply as we can because we have so much of it. We're trying to take advantage of that. So I thought that was an interesting graphic to share. And let's talk about what we've done so far with regards to our surplus water programs. We have 100% allocation. We do not have demands to utilize all that water. So we have put as much as we can in our banks. We are saving some for next year. We're using as much as we can locally, but we still have surplus water that we can take advantage of and use for other programs to help with reliability. So the board executed or approved, I guess, supported the Rosedale 2-for-1 exchange program on August 1st. We did execute that agreement in August and it was sent to DWR. And the status of that program, we're hoping to get approved by next week, the DWR agreement, and then we can get the water moving and delivered October through December. That was a 2-for-1 exchange up to 20,000 acre feet, 10-year term, and we'll get about half of that back. And then on top of that, we also completed an agreement with the Devil's Den leaseholder to purchase a little bit of water. He wanted to do some farming. We had extra water. So we did an agreement with him up that he could purchase up to 2,000 acre feet. And to date, he's taken about 200 acre feet. So I hear he does intend to take all of it, but he hasn't yet. So we'll just have to wait and see. Next, I wanted to look at reservoir storage. As I've been saying, and I think as all the articles are saying, the reservoirs are full, there's lots of water. So this is an example of what's going on in San Luis Reservoir this water year. The light blue section shows us the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation's portion of water supplies, and then the dark blue is DWR's share. And so you can see that San Luis has basically been full sometime in the middle of March, and it stayed fairly full throughout the entire year. Came down a little in July, but it's going back up again. You know, there's just not a lot of space to put more water, so it's a good thing the reservoirs are full. And this is just an example. So getting into DWR position analysis, with the reservoirs being full, especially San Luis, that's where our carryover supply is being stored for next year. It's all table A right now. DWR did some position analyses where they take the demand patterns and August delivery files from all the state water contractors, and they simulate all these conditions similar to what Najwa does with her probability of exceedance. And so what they were looking at in their position analysis were, what are the chances that San Luis will be full by the end of December? And so what their analysis showed was that there's about a 45% chance of San Luis filling DWR's share by the end of December. And so that helps us kind of say, yeah, you know, it's probably a good thing that we're getting rid of this surplus water, because if we don't do anything with it, we'll just lose it if San Luis fills. And so it's better to try to make good programs with this extra water. In addition, they did another analysis looking at the probability for Article 21 deliveries happening again before the end of the year. So we did have quite a bit of Article 21 delivered. I believe it was about 420,000 acre feet were delivered earlier this year between March and June. But there is another probability. You saw that San Luis graphic kind of tilting back up again. They're filling it up again. So there's a chance that there could be more Article 21 available. And once San Luis becomes full, any extra water that they can pump in from the Delta becomes Article 21. So their analysis showed that there's about a 35% chance of Article 21 being available before the end of the year. 25% of it being more than 100,000 acre feet, and 10% chance of it being more than 200,000 acre feet. So again, just kind of validating, try not to store too much water in San Luis, because there's a chance you could lose it. Lastly, I just wanted to go over another thing that we're keeping an eye on, that you've heard me say before, that we have shifted into El Nino, and kind of what does that mean? Basically, there's a 95% chance that El Nino conditions will persist through the winter. And DWR shared these two graphics with us that just show kind of past El Nino events and strong El Nino conditions. So start with the left-hand side, the past El Nino events. This is a graphic that they shared with us, which shows 24 historical El Nino seasons and the impacts of those events throughout the state. Was it wet? Was it normal? Was it dry? Because, you know, like La Nina, there's a chance of anything happening. But what's happened in the past? So you can see that in Northern California and Sierra Nevada area, there's about a 1/3 chance of anything happening. As you move down the state, a little bit more of a chance for wet conditions in Central California, and even more chance of wetter conditions in Southern California. The reason for this is that El Nino tends to push those storm tracks farther south. So it's more common for Southern California to have a wetter season. The strong El Nino conditions on the right-hand side. So there's numerous models right now that are suggesting that this El Nino could exceed our last strong El Nino, which was experienced in 2016. Not all the models are saying that, but enough that they wanted to talk about it. So there's a potential for this to be a strong El Nino event. And again, with all the graphics for all the different areas, the most significant differences that you can see are in Central California and Southern California just have a higher probability of having a wet year. The future supply is not dependent on whether it's an El Nino season or a La Nina season. It's really dependent on those individual storms that come through. So this just is another thing to keep an eye out on. The probability of having more rain this year in our area is looking pretty good. But we still just don't know that crystal ball. And that's all I have for the water supply update. If there's any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Barnes. Any questions from public? Any questions from virtual attendees? Characters, comments, questions?
No, very good news.
Yeah, good news indeed. Thank you for the presentation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's move on to item 3.3, staff activities presented by Mr. Alassane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My staff report this time is shorter because a lot of the times we have been spending trying to find place for the excess water that we are having. So it was took a lot of effort from Sarah and other staff in the group. A couple of my reports are we continue having meetings with our partners to continue looking into opportunities for collaboration with United, with Rosedale, and with Irvine Ranch. And so we had in the past month had a couple of meetings with all of those, and we continue to meet with them just to update on some of the operations in Rosedale, understanding what they're doing, and also some of the operations in United. And so we share information and create that venue for exchange of ideas, exchange of information, and things like that. We had a chance also to meet with Department of Fish and Wildlife, and the purpose of that meeting is to enhance relationship and establish information sharing channels. And also we wanted to understand the agency needs from us as stewards of the Upper Santa Clara River. And so as it's going to be becoming a part of our analysis, we are doing the CIF analysis, we are doing the habitat suitability model, and we wanted them to kind of loop them into these activities that we're doing. And Iguala will a well-received meeting. Actually, we had a very good discussion with them, and they are asking us to come to them with some presentations about the groundwater sustainability plan that we developed, and also a future presentation about CEF to them. So this is something that we are planning to work with them. We're starting developing that relationship with their staff on that reason. Just a last point here I want to mention. I think Steve also will have a couple of items to share. The last item is staff members also attended the Groundwater Resources Association, the Western Groundwater Conference here in Burbank. And two of our staff members participated, actually. Nadia is one of them. She came directly from the conference today to this meeting. So it's a good opportunity to engage in and network with many of the groundwater professionals in the state. And especially this is also bringing others from nationwide. So it was a good opportunity to listen to some of these presentations. That's my end of my presentation.
Thank you, Rob. Mr. Cole, you have
just two quick ones. One, I'm sure you all hopefully saw the news release on Bouquet Creek and the award of the design and planning costs. They're substantial, but that was a great big step in moving that project forward. So there's a lot of people that were pulling for that. I had the opportunity to testify with the Wildlife Conservation Board. So I did that, and that project was approved. So it's a huge step to get the thing designed and shovel ready. And then there will be another very heavy lift of getting the dollars necessary to do the project. But project doesn't happen unless you have this step. So excited about that. That's a culmination of a lot of work by a lot of people. The other one is just we're starting to develop a relationship with the Army Corps. There's opportunities for doing some work with the Army Corps in the watershed. Render removal is specifically what's on tap for this. They're going to come out and visit with us. We're going to walk the river and get them exposed to what that is and potential for doing a feasibility study. That's the first step you go through with them to engage with them about future funding opportunities on a project. So we'll be doing that. And that's it.
Now, how are they looking to remove it?
Yeah, and that's a big question now. One of the things I experienced at the Wildlife Conservation Board hearing was how adamant the Wildlife Conservation Board is becoming about using herbicides, and that is going to be a major challenge.
About not using
herbicides. Yeah. And so The methodology currently is you know, cut it and daub it.
Yeah.
Right. Very specific. It's a very labor intensive process. But yeah. They actually daub the cut shoots, and that tends to work well. It's too early to say what the methodology would be of this. That's what would be part of the feasibility study.
Which is wildlife conservation boards here as an alternative.
They didn't have a good alternative. Yeah. What they were requesting of applicants is that they study an alternative. I think the results are going to be very difficult to come by, other than it gets very manually intensive, right? You need to dig it out, and then the impacts of what that does to the watershed are.
And then that really does
take it into account.
Okay, before I move on with questions from directors, comments, questions from the public attendance? No? Questions from the public? Okay. Question, Shaw Sambo. Fish and Wildlife, do they have any specific requests on how we do things, or any specific requests on what you want to see from us?
They wanted just the general presentation about the groundwater system plan. They want to understand that, and we approached them to share with them that we're trying to utilize the California Environmental Flows Framework as the management tool in the upper basin of the Santa Clara. And that's of interest for them. That's they're interested in knowing more and how we're going to approach it. So it was, they didn't have very specific things that we want to see, so and so, but they are asking us to come with more information. And we had a chance here to go and present to them, hopefully in the next couple of months.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions, comments to Mr. Cole or Mr. Avasan? Okay, let's move on to item 4, committee planning calendar. Mr. Olson?
I think we made some change in it, but this is as it stands now. So we are continue evaluating some of these projects. It's a very dynamic calendar, as you can have seen, but hopefully we'll come back with, if there is any change, we'll make it very early on so that you are aware. Distance as it is right now.
Thank you. Any questions from the public in attendance? Any comments from directors or requests for additional items in the phone?
Okay.
Thank you. All right, we'll move on to item 5, closed session. We will meet in a closed session to discuss item 5.1. Members of the public and any staff may stay on a Zoom webinar. And once closed session is over, the committee will reconnect to Zoom webinar for closed session announcements and the remaining items on the agenda. So since this is a closed session, we ask you to go ahead and remain in the hallway, and then I'll let you know when we'll let the public back in.
Thank you.
Okay, we're back from closed session. We'll move to item number 6. Mr. Gold, can you please report on closed session elements?
Sure. Thank you, Chair. The committee met in closed session to discuss the item listed on your agenda under 5.1. Discussion was had, but no action was taken. But this is reportable under the Brown Act.
Thank you, Mr. Cole. Any questions from public? Virtual public? Thank you. And move to item number 7, adjournment. Please adjourn. Thank you, staff and directors.